All right.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world, and happy Friday, everybody. I hope we're live. I don't even know if this thing is working because the whole freaking internet is broken this morning. Is it working? I think so. I'm getting a big error message. Let's just go, shall we? Let's just pretend we're live. Okay, I got a number up on the screen. It looks like it's a yes. The whole freaking internet is breaking again. We've got outages everywhere. It looks like Cloudflare has been hacked. I know we're not reaching Twitter right now because I have a big thing flashing on my screen that says Twitter all brokey right now. So for you guys on Twitter, I don't know why I'm even talking to you right now, but I'll upload or I'll share the YouTube link after the stream is done so you guys can get the show. Cloudflare got hacked. Ironically, it took down Detector. Talk about your mind-blowing irony. Hey, guys, like this is happening a lot lately, these AWS outages and Azure outages, and it's starting to get a little alarming, and it's kind of chapping my ass this morning, but let's just move right past the whole internet outage thing, and let's get on with the show, shall we? Risk off permeates the market this morning. We have got, once again, Bitcoin selling off, very briefly dipped below 90,000 last night. I was actually talking with my cousin yesterday. We were having a text message, and he was saying, hey, we could see Bitcoin go below 90,000 this week. I said, hell, we could see Bitcoin go below 90,000 tonight. And then about an hour later, it did. So how about that? Look, guys, what's going on here? We've got risk off. Everybody's worried about risk right now. So they're selling risk assets, crypto, Bitcoin, quintessential risk assets. Not too surprising there. Now, tech stocks are selling off as well. Not as hard and as intense as Bitcoin is. Bitcoin's down like almost 30% from its highs. Tech stocks like the NASDAQ off about 6% from its highs. So the tech stock sell-off isn't as bad. But the question is, what's going on? Is the tail wagging the dog or the dog wagging the tail, right? Tech AI bubble, crypto bubble, which is which here? I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, both on these live streams and in some interviews elsewhere, I've been talking about how, like, hey, you know, the AI bubble, when it goes, it could take Bitcoin down with it. Or, you know, when the crypto bubble goes, it could take the AI bubble down with it. They're both kind of two different branches of the same tree, both extremely speculative, risky bets here. I've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. Congratulations, Bloomberg and CNBC. You've caught up with my channel once again. You guys are doing really good lately. I you know, keep up the good work over there. And all of this, of course, is ahead of NVIDIA earnings, which are tomorrow. And, you know, I have to say, I mentioned that I'm now short NVIDIA the other day or just yesterday. I took out some puts on NVIDIA on Friday. It's 50-50 whether NVIDIA blows away earnings or not, right? I mean, NVIDIA's earnings are probably going to be really good. We've seen it for a while. All that money OpenAI lost, it probably went to NVIDIA. All this ridiculous money that's being raised and debts being taken out, it's all in the great name of sacrificing it at the altar of NVIDIA's revenues. But even if they're that good, the stock might not like it because look at what Palantir reported. Phenomenal numbers at Palantir, and the stock sold off. And I think the analysts are starting to get wind of this because we got a whole slew of downgrades this morning. First off, Morgan Stanley has downgraded Dell and HPE. Now, this is interesting. They're downgrading these two names, their server manufacturers, on DRAM and NAND memory prices spiking. I've gotten a couple of messages from people. Thank you, everybody who reached out, by the way. Appreciate the intel. These memory prices are going through the roof, and the server makers are catching a downgrade because of it. Now, I couldn't help but notice those TSS Inc. earnings from last week. We talked about that. TSS Inc., a name I had never even heard of until last week, admittedly. But they get 100% of their revenue from Dell. And they saw a 40% revenue decline. That can't be good for Dell, who, by the way, reports earnings after the close today. Remember the delays in data center projects that Supermicro Computer reported? Remember the delays with one single project that Michael and Trader over at CoreWeave lied about? It was actually one data center builder and a whole handful of projects. That guy lies through his teeth. But I digress. All of these delays, maybe it's because nobody can afford to buy the memory cards that are the memory chips that go into these servers. And server manufacturing is a very narrow margin business to begin with. Maybe that's why everybody's having a delay all at the same time. Maybe that's not so good for Dell earnings after the bell. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. And of course, if the server makers aren't doing well, and if they're all delaying things, then what the hell's going on over at NVIDIA? I guess we'll just have to wait and see for that. But we got another big downgrade. Redburn downgrades Microsoft and Amazon this morning. That's interesting. Two big names that have done nothing but go up in a straight line for several years now, catching a downgrade. Some strong language used by this analyst. He's saying the bull case for generative AI is no longer clear. You think maybe it's no longer clear? You guys been saying you're going to make all this money. Maybe you should make some fucking money. Uh-oh. I just dropped an F-bomb. Sorry. I don't do that often. Every now and then my sailor's mouth shows. Sorry about that, guys. But look, there's no ROI. And the depreciation cycles he's mentioning in this downgrade this morning also, that's the same thing Dr. Burry mentioned in his short thesis, that they're all lying about how long this equipment is going to last. They all changed from a 3 to 4 year depreciation cycle to a 5 to 6 year depreciation cycle when this bubble started. Why? Because this whole bubble is just one giant accounting fraud, but I digress. Meanwhile, Amazon just continues to pile into data centers. They're joining the debt issue blitz with $15 billion worth of bonds that they issued yesterday. Gotta keep those NVIDIA revenues inflated, yo. Outside of data centers, we got Home Depot earnings this morning. Now, this is interesting. Home Depot earnings per share down 5% year over year. The comps, the comparable sales or same store sales were up 0.2%. Keep in mind, though, that is amid 3% inflation, which means Home Depot is selling less stuff. That's just a reminder, guys, that outside of Sam and Jensen's science project, the economy pretty much sucks. Meanwhile, we've got Klarna earnings this morning, or lack thereof, I should say. Klarna beat on revenue. They have no earnings to report. They lost money. Interesting, no mention anywhere in this article about delinquencies. We're seeing delinquencies skyrocket in autos. We're seeing delinquencies rise in credit cards. We're seeing them rise much more slowly in mortgages and home equity, but they are rising. Yet nobody seems to ask these buy now, pay later companies that will lend money to literally freaking anybody just if they tap Y on a screen when they do their self-checkout and there's nothing to repossess. Yet nobody's wondering about delinquencies in that debt. Come on, guys. Come on. I can't be the only one thinking this. And meanwhile, we've got Elliot is like, oh, yeah, we'll buy $6.5 billion of Klarna's debt. Why would Elliot buy $6.5 billion of Klarna's debt? Probably because Elliot is paying with somebody else's money. They don't care. They're just a fee shop. And look, we're sitting here looking at the bond market, and everybody's like, oh, the market doesn't seem all that worried because credit spreads are very narrow. Yeah, people are paying up for junk debt amid rising delinquencies everywhere in the consumer credit market because they're paying with somebody else's money because President Trump cleared the way to dump all that toxic sludge into our IRAs and 401ks with his alternative assets executive order. That's why credit spreads are so tight right now, because the people buying this shit are not paying with their own money. It's our money. But it's going to work out great, guys. We're democratizing access to these wonderful alternative assets. Meanwhile, we got a couple of stories about aluminum prices this morning. Rio Tinto is raising prices because of tariffs. We knew this was coming. We didn't know how much of it was coming. We didn't know how much was going to be eaten by the company's profit margins and how much was going to be passed on to consumers. A lot is getting passed on to consumers. And even as that is going on, Europe is talking about adding export duties to their aluminum scrap to try to maintain supplies within Europe to feed their domestic smelters. Quite a mess in the aluminum market. That can't be good for the aircraft manufacturers or for the soda companies, for that matter, the beer companies. We've got jobless claims are back this morning. We'll talk about those. They took a couple of weeks off from the government shutdown. Raystone needs a rescue. Now, Raystone is another one of those companies I had never heard of, along with First Brands, another company I had never really heard of, although I know all about what First Brands sold. They need a rescue because they get about 80% or 75% of their revenue from First Brands. First Brands went bankrupt. That debt is all going bad, and they're going to go bankrupt at Raystone if they don't get a rescue. So they're out trying to downplay their losses here. That company is toast. And we're going to wrap up with a cautionary tale about private credit from Blue Owl. This one was going around yesterday. Yikes, baby. Yikes. What's going on at Blue Owl? investors taking a 20% haircut. And this is the same company that is pumping other people's money into Facebook's data center projects. Oh, what's the worst thing that could happen? It's just going to be great. You guys are going to love it. You know what? Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance this morning. And as always, guys, don't forget that like button. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come on back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And here you can see, guys, I got Down Detector up on the screen. It was working for a couple of minutes today, so I just left it there. Here's the Cloudflare outage. That's what went bad this morning. It looks like it took a lot of things with it. There's X, Twitter not working here, Spotify not working, OpenAI is not working. That's all right. Just keep buying NVIDIA's chips. And AWS also went down. A lot of issues with AWS these last few weeks. Somebody's hacking them left and right. Now let's refresh Down Detector and see if it works here. Okay, it is working. And you can see the Cloudflare outage is getting worse here. That number is heading higher. So I don't know what's going on here, guys, but the internet, no worky this morning. All right, looking at the S&P 500, down 33 points, about a half a percent in the red this morning, continuing its sell-off from yesterday. The Dow, meanwhile, is down 365 points ahead of the opening bell, 0.8% lower for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is off by about 0.62%, 153 points lower for the tech-heavy NASDAQ. Now, my Dixie chart is a mess here, also because of the Cloudflare outage. The charts were not working this morning, so never mind the candles on the screen here. The Dixie is a little lower, though, 6 basis points to the downside, 99.48 for the dollar this morning. Looking over at the bond market, we've got the 30-year yield is at 4.714. That's lower by 2 points and change. The 10-year is at 4.094. That's off by almost 4 points. The 2 years at 3.560, lower by 5 basis points. And the 1 month is off by a point and a half at 3.945. We've got yields heading lower. That is people buying bonds for safety. Again, a risk-off trade. Does that translate to metals? And not really, kind of not. Depends where you are, I guess. Metals in London are up this morning. Spot gold, $4,074. That's up by 28 bucks and 0.7% higher. Meanwhile, that front month New York gold contract, $4,073, that's actually pretty much unchanged, down by about 40 cents here. All right, so gold holding above 4,000 despite some rough patches we've hit for the last couple of days. That's not bad. We've also got my favorite of the shinies. Silver is holding above 50 here. Spot silver, $50.48. That's up by 27 cents or 0.55% ahead of the opening bell. That's the price in London. Silver in New York, the December COMEX future is at $50.31. That's actually lower by 40 cents or 0.8%. We're still looking at about 17 cents of backwardation between London and New York here. Either way, I like the shiny. Copper is down about 0.6% this morning. Platinum is off by 0.8%. Palladium is off a little less than a half a percent. And crude oil is down about a dime here, 0.15% lower, $59.77 for January WTI crude oil futures. Looking at Bitcoin, we've caught a little bit of a bounce this morning. Emphasis on a little bit, currently at $91,217, well below this point yesterday. Overnight, we dipped. It looks like the low overnight was about $89,183. So some dip buying going on here, but Bitcoin has been relentless in its sell-off here, guys. Let's see what they're saying on CNBC. Bitcoin briefly falls below 90,000 to lowest since April as cryptocurrency gives up 2025 gain. Bitcoin is now red for the year. Bitcoin is now in the red for this year as investors continue to shed their speculative technology holdings with the cryptocurrency first among them. Notice they're saying tech holdings here. They're lumping in the AI trade with Bitcoin. Again, you're only a couple of weeks behind me. Congratulations. Bitcoin was last trading around 91,000, but earlier Tuesday touched $89,259, its lowest since April 22nd. With Tuesday's losses, Bitcoin is now down 2% for the year per FactSet. The move comes as investors have shed their AI-related tech holdings this month in the stock market. Bitcoin appeared to foreshadow the risk-off move, peaking in early October at a record above 126,000 and sliding ever since. The tech-heavy NASDAQ 100 stock index is off by 4% this month, following cryptocurrencies lower. Many large tech investors are also big holders of the cryptocurrency space. Mike O'Rourke, chief market strategist at Jones Trading, said the correlation between Bitcoin and the tech stock sell-off this week is undeniable. It is truly the tail wagging the dog when a $1.8 trillion market cap speculative asset is significantly influencing the $32 trillion market cap index, said O'Rourke. It is alarming to see the index, with its highly concentrated exposure to the largest and most influential companies in the world and the U.S. equity market, taking cues from Bitcoin. Well, look, guys, Bitcoin winter was predictable. You could just look at the calendar and tell when the sell-off in Bitcoin was going to begin. And I think it was also predictable that Bitcoin would weigh on tech because there's so much overlap between the crypto miners and these data center builders right now that a decline in their Bitcoin prices is going to affect the data center buildouts. And, you know, we got some stories to that effect this morning. And this is all happening. Keep in mind the context here. We're 24 hours, I guess we're like 36 hours removed from NVIDIA's earnings here. And we've got a bunch of downgrades. Dell and HPE shares sink after Morgan Stanley downgrades. Computer hardware stocks also hit. Data center stocks took a major hit on Monday after Morgan Stanley downgraded seven hardware companies, including Dell and Hewlett-Packard. The bank double downgraded Dell from overweight to underweight and downgraded HPE from overweight to equal weight. Can't help but notice that double downgrade on Dell just a few days after those TSS Inc. earnings. That is noteworthy. Dell and HPE closed down 8 and 7% respectively. HP, Asus Tech, and Pegatron were also downgraded from equal weight to underweight, while Gigabyte and Lenovo shares were lowered from equal weight to overweight. All companies saw shares dip as much as 6%. Morgan Stanley analysts wrote that computer makers are in the midst of an unprecedented pricing supercycle as hyperscalers continue to accelerate data center demand, pushing hardware valuations to reach all-time highs. Major DRAM and NAND manufacturers have been hiking prices as climbing AI infrastructure demand continues to bleed memory supplies dry. Samsung reportedly hiked prices for its memory chips by as much as 60% since September, according to Reuters. Analysts pointed to the memory cycle between 2016 and 2018, where NAND and DRAM prices increased 80 to 90%. Increased device prices were unable to offset the soaring input costs, causing original equipment and design manufacturers to experience compressed gross margins. The margins are already tight for a company like Dell. During this period, we saw earnings pressure and multiple derating from hardware stocks with elevated DRAM exposure, lower pricing power, and narrower margins, but outperformance from companies able to pass off costs to end customers, analysts wrote. Dell was highlighted as one of the hardware companies most exposed to rising memory costs, noting that the company's gross margin contracted by 95 to 170 basis points during the last memory cycle. The company is one of NVIDIA's major customers and builds computers around the AI giant's chips, which it then sells to end users such as cloud service CoreWeave. Oh, CoreWeave. Gotta love that company. Dell stock down, what do we got? 1.4% ahead of the opening bell after falling almost 8.5% yesterday, currently trading at $120.76. Dell reports after the bell today. Watch that one closely, guys. That will give you some hints into NVIDIA's earnings later this week. And we got another downgrade. It's not just Dell and those hardware manufacturers. Microsoft and Amazon are downgraded as Redburn breaks ranks with peers. That is a bold call. Honestly, these analysts are the worst group thinkers in the world, always afraid to go against the pack. So when you see a downgrade of names like Microsoft and Amazon, that is noteworthy. Things have to be pretty bad for somebody to break ranks in this group. The bull case for generative artificial intelligence is no longer clear, and hyperscalers should be approached with caution, according to an analyst who downgraded two of Wall Street's most favored tech giants. Microsoft and Amazon saw their ratings cut to neutral from buy on Tuesday as Rothschild & Co Redburn's Alexander Haesel downgraded the stocks for the first time since initiating coverage in June of 2022, according to data compiled by Bloomberg. The industry's trust us, Gen AI is just like early cloud 1.0 narrative, looks increasingly misplaced, Haesel wrote in a note, stating that the underlying economics are far weaker than assumed. Haesel's downgrade follows a sell-off in the tech-heavy NASDAQ 100, which wiped out almost $1.8 trillion since late October peak to send the gauge down 5.1% in that time. Investors have retreated from AI-related stocks amid unease over stretched valuations. Gen AI margins already assume longer depreciation schedules of 5 to 6 years versus just 3 years in the early cloud era, Hazel said. On a like-for-like basis, this means capital intensity for Gen AI is significantly higher while pricing power is notably weaker. All right, Mr. Hazel here is channeling Michael Burry's recent tweets, drawing attention to the depreciation schedules. Hey, that's something we've been talking about for the last 2 years on this channel as well, but I digress. Hedge fund manager Michael Burry, who's best known for his bet against the U.S. housing market before the 2008 GFC, has chimed in with cryptic posts about depreciation of assets at large tech companies. You don't think that downgrade is going to slow down Amazon's data center build out one bit, do you? Oh, silly rabbit. Amazon joins AI-related debt blitz as pressure emerges in tech companies' credit spreads. Investors are starting to worry about too much AI-related debt issuance. Investors digested another huge artificial intelligence-related debt deal on Monday as supply pressures weigh on credit spreads of major technology companies. Amazon on Monday raised $15 billion through a six-part bond deal, which included bonds that repay over the next 40 years, according to Informa Global Markets. The deal was upsized from around $12 billion initially, and pricing narrowed from initial levels, signaling strong demand for the deal. Yet the financing comes as investors have endured a recent barrage of tech bonds issued by Oracle, Meta, and Google parent Alphabet, among others, a major departure from roughly the past two decades of relatively sparse borrowing activities from the world's major tech companies. And look at this chart. This is the debt issuance from big tech companies over the last couple of years, going all the way back to 2008. Let's make this a little bigger for you guys. You can see here we had a surge when we went to zero interest rates in 2020, 2021. We saw a big surge in debt issuance for these companies. Then when interest rates rose, they stopped borrowing for the most part. Meta, of course, kept borrowing. You have to spend money on the metaverse, right? But they spent all that money they borrowed in 2021 and 22. They spent all that on stock buybacks and data centers. Now they're out of cash. And look at the surge of debt issuance from big tech. You know, all these analysts and private credit a-holes that are out there saying, oh, the AI bubble narrative is all FUD and it's all fake because this data center build out, it's supported by big tech CapEx. Then somebody tell me, why is big tech borrowing so much freaking money at higher interest rates if their free cash flows and their balance sheet can support this data center build out? I'll save you the trouble, guys. They can't afford it. That's why they're all borrowing. Now, they have very strong businesses elsewhere that can afford this debt service cost into the future, but that's beside the fact that they're lighting their own investors' money on fire, and they're afraid to stop because the second they know all their stocks are going to crash in unison together in one glorious bursting of the AI bubble. And I think that's about all I got on that story. But look at Amazon shares. They're down again this morning, 2.3% lower. Probably that downgrade contributing to that one, $227.42 for shares of Amazon. All right, now forget data centers. Forget all the crap with AI. Let's talk about real things, shall we, for a change? Home Depot cuts forecast on weak demand for big ticket items. Oh, that's right. Nobody's buying real things. We don't make things. Our only export is inflation and Ponzi schemes. Home Depot cut its full-year earnings guidance, warning that some unsteady consumers are hitting the pause button on big tech home prices. The world's largest home improvement retailer said it expects adjusted earnings per share to decline 5% from a year ago, lower than its previous forecast. The company said its profit and comparable sales came in lower than expected in the last quarter, citing the overall weakness in the housing market and a lack of storms that hampered demand in roofing, generators, and other categories. All right, we'll say a lack of storms. That's good news. The company shares fell 2% on Tuesday in pre-market trading in New York. Its stock had dropped about 8% this year through Monday's close compared to a 13% increase in the S&P 500 index. Again, that 13% increase in the S&P, that is totally driven by big tech. It has nothing to do with the real economy. Let's see. Still, comparable sales rose only 0.2%, missing analyst forecasts of 1.36%, and the company doesn't see signs of a major uptick anytime soon. All right, so the comps were positive. I guess that's good, but they were just barely positive, 0.2%. Keep in mind, we've got 3% inflation, and comparable sales are not adjusted for inflation. That means they're selling a lot less stuff at Home Depot here, and the stock reflects that this morning. Yikes, down 5.1%, $339.89 for Home Depot adding to year-to-date losses, not so good, guys. The frozen housing market is weighing on that one. But don't worry, guys. The debt is doing really great. Like, debt is selling like hotcakes. Look at Klarna's earnings, or lack thereof. Klarna tops third quarter revenue estimates in first earnings report since the IPO. Oh, if only there were signs. Klarna topped Wall Street third quarter revenue expectations in its first earnings report after debuting on the New York Stock Exchange in September. Here's how the company performed. Revenue of $903 million versus $882 million expected. Now, you'll notice right here, guys, where they're saying revenue, there's usually a second bullet point for earnings per share, but you ain't got no second bullet point. What's going on here? Revenues grew 26% from $706 million in the year-ago period. The company reported a net loss of $95 million, a drop from a year ago when it had net income of $12 million. Oh, well, maybe that's why there's no second bullet point, because the company doesn't make any money. I thought I had something else going on here. Nope. Okay, so here's the thing about Klarna. All right, let me just do a little control F here, because this company sells debt, right? That's their product. Their product is debt. So let's do control F, and let's look for the word delinquent. No, the word delinquency does not appear here. That's interesting. What about the word default? No, the word default doesn't appear here. All right, this company's not a bank, but they deal in debt, and it's an earnings report, and the word delinquency, like, are people paying it back, doesn't even appear in the vocabulary of Samantha Subin over at CNBC. They're not even asking the freaking question, and that's a big deal, because if you deal in debt, don't you think people might want to know if it's getting paid back or not? Well, Elliott doesn't seem to care. Elliott Inc.'s deal to buy up to $6.5 billion of Klarna's U.S. loans. Oh, well, that's nice. Probably because Elliott ain't using their own money. That's your 401k and your IRA money. Or ultimately, that's where this debt is going. Elliott's going to buy all this stuff, and they're going to sell it to people's – they're going to sell it to fixed income funds or high yield funds. They're not going to sit there and wait for those loans to go bad. Of course not. They're going to park that crap in your 401k and your IRA. Klarna stock down 4.3% this morning, $33.40. And by the way, I am going to throw Affirm in with this category. There is just no way on God's green earth that the delinquencies at Affirm are as low as their CEO, Max Levkin, who is a horrible liar, by the way, is claiming. There's just no way. Watching all the debt everywhere else go bad, the idea that people are still paying off their BNPL loans when nothing happens to them if they don't pay them just doesn't pass the sniff test. Klarna stock now down 6.6% and accelerating to the downside. All right, again, back in the real world, guys, we got a couple of aluminum headlines this morning. World's top aluminum producer adds markups as Trump tariffs drive up consumer costs. All right, we're not still pretending that tariffs aren't going to make things more expensive, are we? I mean, we know it's going to happen at least to some extent. We can debate how much. That's open to debate. But the fact that, like, this whole silly talking point that, oh, no, tariffs are paid by the importers or they're paid by the other countries and therefore it's not going to drive up prices, people didn't really ever believe that, did they? That was just a team sport of politics influencing what they were saying outwardly. We all knew it was going to drive up prices. Well, here's some proof. Rio Tinto Group is imposing surcharges on aluminum shipments it sells to the U.S., a move that threatens to further disrupt the North American market already roiled by import tariffs that are driving up costs for consumers. The Anglo-Australian mining giant is including the extra charge on aluminum orders delivered to the U.S., citing low inventories as demand starts to outstrip available supply, according to people with direct knowledge of the matter. The U.S. relies heavily on foreign aluminum supplies as it doesn't have the capacity to produce enough to meet demand. Canada is its number one foreign supplier, accounting for more than 50% of U.S. imports. The surcharge adds stress to an already extremely constrained U.S. market after President Trump earlier this year imposed a 50% import tariff on the lightweight metal, which is used in everything from soda cans to construction. Tariffs made Canadian shipments too expensive for American metal fabricators and consumers. Instead, they've drawn on domestic stockpiles and exchange warehouses, leading supplies to dwindle and prices to jump. The latest markup amounts to a charge on top of a charge, since U.S. aluminum producers already include so-called Midwest premium, an added cost above the London benchmark price that reflects transportation, storage, insurance, and financing to deliver the metal into the American marketplace. Each global region has its own premium, which is usually set by pricing reporting agencies. The new surcharge ranges from 1 to 3 cents above the Midwest premium, said people familiar who asked not to be identified, discussing private contract details. Though that's a modest amount, the markup plus the Midwest premium translates into an extra $2,006 per ton on top of the raw metal price of about $2,830, implying a more than 70% premium. That's above Trump's 50% import duty. So look, I don't know, this paragraph, when they get to 70% premium, I don't know if they're doing a little bit of mental gymnastics here. How much of that Midwest premium is really being driven by tariffs? Probably most of it, but they're trying to take that Midwest premium and then add this surcharge to make it look bigger than it really is. And honestly, I can't spot the lie here. It just seems like they're trying to inflate the charge a little bit. But that's beside the point, guys. The tariffs are making it more expensive. And I think we should start talking to people like adults, and we should stop acting like tariffs aren't going to make prices go up. They are. It's debatable how much. But just explain to people that the reason we're trying to do this is so we could have real jobs in this country again, not bullshit jobs as a barista at Starbucks, acting like you're supposed to be able to support a family on that. You can't. We need manufacturing back in this country again. People are willing to buy that. I don't understand why we need to do this like, oh, no, the prices won't go up. No, costs are going down. Don't gaslight people. It's stupid. Meanwhile, Europe is getting in on the aluminum game. EU aluminum producers push for a 30% scrap export levy. This is interesting that now scrap prices, this has got to be related to Trump's tariffs somehow, although I was scratching my head a little bit on this one. The European Union's aluminum sector is urging the European Commission to impose duties of around 30% on exports of scrap metal to stop it flooding out of the bloc and leaving domestic producers short. EU aluminum scrap exports hit a record 1.26 million metric tons in 2024, according to industry group European Aluminum, around 50% higher than 5 years ago, with most heading to Asia. The EU industry says the situation has since worsened due to President Trump's import tariffs, which were set at 50% for aluminum, but only 15% for scrap. That's boosted scrap imports into the United States and reduced exports, pushing Asian buyers to focus more on EU supply. So once again, protectionist trade policy is spreading here. The EU is saying we're trying to keep our aluminum scrap here. The European Union is trying to keep their own metal smelters in business, who they're already struggling with higher power prices and very tight emission standards that you don't have in other countries. So Europe is getting in on the protectionism also. Back here on this side of the pond, hey, we got some jobs data from the government today. All right. Good to see that the government is open again. Yes, we're back open for business. All right, we can cut the applause. Let's see how we're doing. Initial jobless claims in the United States totaled 232,000 people for the week ended October 18th. Keep in mind, that's a month ago. Remaining firmly above averages from the period since the end of the second quarter. It was the first data update by the Department of Labor since the U.S. government shut down its federal operations in the first day of October, which risked the employment standing for a large portion of federal government workers. With the new entries, outstanding unemployment claims rose to 1.957 million in the previous week and on a non-seasonally adjusted basis, remaining relatively close to the highest level since 2021. All right, so here's initial jobless claims, 232,000 for the week of October 18th. We did have a gap there. A couple of weeks, we got no reporting due to the shutdown. We came back kind of right in the same band where we were at. I'm going to go ahead, guys, and say put an asterisk on this one. It's the first data we get since the government came back. There's definitely a lot of room for error here in this one. That being said, at the very least, the thing didn't go up in a vertical line, so that's good. Now, we also got continuing claims, 1.96 million, up from 1.95 million, which was also up from 1.92 million before the shutdown. Now, this is kind of interesting. On continuing claims, we got 2 weeks of data here. Again, this data is backdated by almost a month here. We're getting data through October 18th. It's November 18th now. And we had a couple of weeks that I guess that gap is just going to stay there forever now. Now, continuing claims, this is a little worrying because we're kind of settling into the higher end of the band here. We've had a lot of anecdotes about layoffs recently. That's going to add to these continuing claims eventually. The job market isn't good, guys. It didn't get a whole lot worse during the shutdown, at least not based on this little trickle of data that we just got. But remember, we missed 2 months of non-farm payrolls. That's the big one. I don't know when we're going to get that one. That's the one to worry about, is the non-farm payrolls. That is the jobs number that people worry about. Meanwhile, we got some private credit things to worry about this morning. First Brand's demise forces lending firm Raystone to seek a rescue. Who wants to rescue a company who got most of its business from a fraud? Well, apparently nobody, but they're reminding people that they're for sale. The trade finance platform Raystone is looking to sell itself after the collapse of its biggest client, auto parts supplier First Brands Group. Raystone said it is evaluating strategic alternatives due to the liquidity strain it has faced since the demise of First Brands, according to an investor presentation reviewed by Bloomberg. Potential bidders were asked to indicate their interest in an outright sale or an equity recapitalization by October 31st. It's not clear what has happened since that deadline. Raystone did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Guys, it's been almost 3 weeks and we haven't heard anything. That means nothing has happened since that deadline, is what that means. Raystone operates a platform that connects manufacturing firms like First Brands with investors willing to provide short-term cash in exchange for revenues that are scheduled to come in. The company said in its presentation that it is a low-risk platform business that offers accurate data to create a reduced chance of fraud, says the company that just got wiped out by a fraud that they didn't spot. Irony much. These deals ultimately played a central role in First Brand's bankruptcy because they allowed the company to take on obligations that were not visible to many of its long-term lenders. Raystone said after the Chapter 11 filing that $2.3 billion tied to First Brand's trade finance deals had simply vanished. All right, we lost $2.3 billion, but we would like to remind you that we're a low-risk platform business with a reduced chance of fraud. Okay, you guys hear yourselves? Of the $132 million in revenue that Raystone expected for the year, $101 million was projected to come from First Brands. That ain't going to happen now. Even as it faces investigations into whether it raised money through double-pledged or false invoices, First Brands Group is seeking to once again access short-term financing by selling its accounts receivables. Good luck with that. In its presentation, Raystone said it hopes to make $27 million by offering more financing to First Brands as it emerges from bankruptcy. Wait a minute. You guys are telling us you're a low-risk platform, even though you just lost $2.3 billion with First Brands, and your plan to recover is to loan another $27 million to First Brands as they emerge from bankruptcy. And you wonder why you can't find a buyer. Maybe these two things are related. Raystone projects that its revenues will only drop by 50% between 2025 and 2026. Okay, we're being optimistic now? Due to its strong active pipeline of potential deals, even as it cuts headcount to 31 people from 105 in 2024. Okie dokie. Good luck with that one, guys. All right, now for the last one of the day. This one is pretty crazy here. Blue Owl plunges to 2023 low after blocking exit from fund. Now, keep in mind, guys, as we go through this one, Blue Owl is the firm that just helped Meta raise like $30 billion in private credit to fund their data center buildouts. All right. Now, this is what happens when you give money to Blue Owl to invest and they put it into private debt. Blue Owl Capital shares have fallen to their lowest level since December 2023 after the alternative asset manager restricted investors from redeeming capital from one of its oldest private credit funds. Shares dropped almost 6% on Monday, closing at $13.78. The firm announced earlier this month that it would merge its $1.8 billion non-traded business development company, Blue Owl Capital Corporation, that's like a closed private credit fund, with its $17.6 billion publicly listed vehicle, Blue Owl Capital Corp, or OBDC. That's the one that trades like a stock. But investors in the non-traded fund won't be able to redeem their capital until the merger closes, which is expected to happen early next year, according to the statement, which means if you can't have your money back and if you don't like this deal, well, go pound sand. You're not getting your money back. You're going to get shares in this other company instead. Investors in the acquired vehicle will swap their holdings for OBDC stock. That means they could see paper losses of as much as 20% if the deal closes at current share prices, given that OBDC shares are trading at that much of a discount compared to the value of the fund's assets. All right, so there is so much to unpack in this story. All right, the publicly traded private credit fund trades at a 20% discount to the stated net asset value of its holdings. And that's been my biggest gripe with private equity and private credit all along, is that there's no price discovery. When you put all this crap into a box and then you trade it in public markets, the public markets are not willing to buy it for the price tag you put on that box. That is the 20% discount to the net asset value that the OBDC shares are trading at. Now, we've got this other box over here that doesn't trade like a stock, but that one, they put a price tag on that, the net asset value in that, and they're saying, we're going to put that box inside the other box. The problem is the other box we're putting it in, that's traded like a stock. And so when we sell your box to the publicly traded box, you're only going to get 80 cents on the dollar because we've been lying to you about the value of what's in the box. That's what sucks about private credit. That's why these guys, they are just straight up liars that avoid price discovery. And this is the same firm that is out there pumping $30 billion of other people's money into Meta's data center buildouts. Oh, I'm sure that's going to work out just great for the investors. And who are the investors? Remember, guys, the investors, chances are you. Because Blue Owl is not going to hold this crap on their books. Blue Owl is going to dump this garbage into people's retirement funds like they always do. Blue Owl stock is down again this morning, another 0.87%, trading at $11.77. It is now down, is that 20? What's it down year to date? 22% year to date. Oh, it's going to be great. All that data center debt, it's going to look great in your 401k. Trust me. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Bart Stapleton. Thank you, Bart, for supporting the channel. He says, good morning. CrowdStrike outage. Do you think it's coincidental with markets crashing? Tinfoil hat time. All right. So, Bart, I'm going to say no on this particular one. I think it's Cloudflare is the source of this outage, not necessarily CrowdStrike. Maybe CrowdStrike is involved as a contractor or something like that. But Cloudflare seems to be the failure mechanism here. Interestingly enough, a few days ago, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Maybe it was yesterday. There was a brief AWS outage and AWS went down. And when AWS went down, we saw Truist Bank and Huntington Bank shares both went down, their websites with it. And both of those bank stocks were kind of wonky yesterday. The regional banks were not looking very good. And then all of a sudden we get a web outage and none of the banking websites work. That was a little tinfoil hatty. I was like, technical difficulties when people are trying to withdraw money. Maybe that's like, you know, the old crypto playbook, right? When there's a run on cryptocurrencies. Oh, down for maintenance. Sorry. That being said, cyber warfare is becoming more and more prevalent. In terms of cyber attacks, guys, World War III has already started. And AWS is getting hit a lot here. I guess it's Cloudflare that's being hit today. But AWS is going down with it. So maybe they're hitting Cloudflare and AWS simultaneously, or maybe one is taking down the other. I don't know enough about this stuff to say what is what, but it is happening with increasing frequency. And this morning it's messing with my stream on Twitter. And so it's now affecting me personally. I don't like that. I don't know what's going on, Bart, but I know it sucks. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much. And we've got Pandemonium Paladin has been a melonhead for 7 months. Thank you, PP, for supporting the channel. He says, my company laid off 30% of the sales reps last week. Yikes, Pandemonium. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope you made it through. It sucks. I wonder, is this a case of they're like, oh, we're going to get rid of all the salespeople and we're going to have chatbots handle our selling for us? That's going to work out great. Or maybe they're just saying a thing about AI. And then they're using that to mask the fact that they're outsourcing things or that the economy is slowing. See also that conversation I had with Amanda Goodall, aka the Job Chick, a few days ago. She had some very good insights to offer about layoffs. It sucks, guys. This is a lousy job market to lose your job into. So if you are lucky enough to have a job, hang on to it, guys, because it's not getting better in the short term. Sorry to hear that, Pandemonium Paladin, but thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. I hope everything works out for you. Wesley Rubel says, Grok says strategy Bitcoin cost basis 75,000, 200 week moving average 55,000. Anytime you're asking AI for numbers, I would say be very skeptical, Wesley. Whenever you get an AI answer, it's usually going to give you a little link. You'll see a little link icon afterward. Click on that link and verify the numbers. And also check the age of those numbers. A lot of times these chatbots are relying on very old information to do the math. And then sometimes it just can't freaking count. So be very careful when asking AI for numbers. That being said, I can see where you're going with this. The strategy liquidation. Like, when does Michael Saylor get margin called? I don't know what that level is. Nobody, only Saylor knows, and Saylor's creditors know what that level is. We've been here before during the last crypto winter after, you know, in the lead up to the collapse of FTX and Terra Luna and all that stuff. A lot of people were wondering, when is Michael Saylor going to get margin called? When is he going to get liquidated? There was a lot of talk about what his liquidation price was. Ultimately, we never got to that liquidation price. So Saylor survived last winter. Now, the problem with that, guys like Saylor can't help themselves. They need to constantly tap dance on a knife's edge. And so Saylor was emboldened by surviving last winter, and he came back this cycle with some of the most crazy creative accounting I've ever seen, the infinite money glitch. And we found out yesterday the infinite money glitch is finite after all. So we're right back where we were a few years ago, wondering where Saylor's going to get liquidated. And to your point, it's a good bet that it's a hell of a lot higher this time, because I think Saylor probably took even more risk this time around. Will we hit that liquidation level? I don't know. But guys, we're at the point now, somebody's going to go pop in the crypto space very soon. I think it's probably going to be one of these treasury companies. Somebody is going to get liquidated. Somebody's going to freeze withdrawals. Somebody's going to go bankrupt. Some fraud is going to be exposed. We're now down about 30%. And all of these frauds are wholly dependent on the price only ever going up in a straight line. It's happened before. It's going to happen again. And it's probably going to happen pretty soon here. Thank you, Wesley, for the super chat and for supporting the channel. Mr. Zenith. Hey, there's a name I haven't heard since that old black and white TV in the playroom when I was a kid. Hey, Mr. Zenith, thank you so much for supporting the channel. Welcome to the Melonhead, sir. Just a reminder, guys, when you are a Melonhead member, you get a free super chat every month. Feel free to use that. I'll read and respond to your questions live on the air. Thank you, Zenith, for supporting the channel, sir. And Mr. Raymond Houston, what's going on, Ray? He's being very generous. Doesn't have much to say. He just says, good to go. I'm looking down at my text. I see no messages from Mish. Did I miss a message from Raymond? He's saying, salud, bros. There's Raymond again asking about Saylor. Oh, here comes Mish again. Mish is always Johnny on the spot with this stuff, with the update. Nope, nothing. Well, Raymond, let me just say thank you so much for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Oh, guys, it's going to be a long one. We got Dell after the bell and the big ones tomorrow. The big one is NVIDIA earnings. We got this sell-off going on. I don't know what's going to come out of it, but it may not always be fun, but it certainly won't be dull. I just want to say thank you very much, everybody, for the super chats and for supporting the channel. Thank you also to my magnanimous melon heads on YouTube and Patreon. Sorry to my Twitter guys. We're having the whole Cloudflare thing going on this morning, but we must press on. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.